right, ladies and gentlemen around the Delaware Valley, welcome to Top Lawyer with Sean Quinn. I've got a fantastic show today on WWDB Talk 860. Great to be live in the studio with Sean. How are you, sir?
I am doing well, Joseph. How are you?
I can't complain. How are the new digs doing down in Old City?
It's going great. It's been so long since we've actually been in the studio for a show. We've done them for my conference room. We've done a couple of tape shows, but it's great to be back in the studio. But yeah, our digs down in Old City, Society Hill on the border there.
Awesome.
It's tremendous. I've never practiced outside of Center City, and I never wanted to leave the city. There's a lot of firms that have, you know, opened up outside the city, and they still characterize themselves as Philly lawyers. And but we know they're based in the suburbs. We know they're not outside. They're either in Jersey or whatever. It was important to us, you know, being a community law firm, that we maintained a presence in the city. So my team is there, and it's going great. You know, it's easy access to and from the highways. It's worked awesome.
Well, I love that area. Also, you're basically in Center City. I mean, you're a little left of Center City, but you're in Center City. I consider it's downtown, and I had my business in that area.
And it's great too, because one of the things that I think when you either grow up in the city or you work in the city so long, you take certain things for granted around your neighborhood.
The historic district.
I mean, it's like I'm a couple blocks from the Constitution Center. I have a museum across the street, and I have cobblestone streets. My property's actually the building I'm in is actually was the site marker where Alexander Hamilton's house was during the Constitutional Congress. So it gives you a different perspective, and you know, in this divided political world we're in, it's really important to, like, you know, pay attention to history, pay Absolutely. Attention to the importance of our democracy, pay attention to, you know, the pillars of justice in this country. And, you know, and I think we take those things for granted. We certainly have over the past 8 years.
Right.
And I think, you know, it's when I get to drive down those streets and look at those buildings, it reminds me just how lucky we are to be in this country, and I think of, you know, our ability to speak freely, whether we're Democrats or Republicans or independents, and, you know, and that we're dissident voices still have voices in this country, and we can get on a microphone and BS about it whenever we want to. And we're going to talk a lot about my favorite month of the year, which is Red October. But it's been great. And I couldn't be more blessed to have a thriving firm in Philadelphia.
Yeah. And you're right about it. I mean, first of all, I have often said, you know, periodically, I said to my wife, let's go take a trip down to the historic district, okay, to Old City, and take advantage of the opportunities that we have every day. People fly from around the world, I mean, by the hundreds of thousands to visit our historic district. And, you know, so very lucky. And that, by the way, that aura in the building that you're in, very cool, very cool doing the show there. And so having said that, you know, you mentioned Red October, okay.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you know,
there's nobody more baseball than you.
It's my favorite time of the year. Sure. There's no question that I live, eat, and breathe, you know, baseball. You know, for a guy that used to play college football but can't watch football on TV, you know, because I just can't stand watching it.
Right.
I enjoyed playing. It was one of those sports. It was never my favorite, though. But baseball's the thing I love the most. And, you know, and – listen, I think, you know, the sky was falling for the past 3 months in Philadelphia.
It was.
We have a tendency as Philadelphia sports fans to be a little bit like Chicken Little and have the sky is falling, the sky is falling approach. And I tried to have a measure of sanity for a long time, and I admit I hit the panic button. There were times where I was losing it.
It is so baseball. You know, first of all, it's never been more exciting. I had the great fortune. Okay, couple things. I had the incredible good fortune. Sonny Banks said to me one day. He said, and you know Sonny well. Sonny Banks says to me, "I got tickets for Friday night's game, but we have a family outing. Would you like them?" And the Phillies hadn't been in town in 17 days. And they were playing the Braves. And, of course, we all know the Rhys Hoskins, right? And throwing it when he, sure. when he hit the home run.
Just a little bit memorable.
Oh, a little bit. And I can say this. Out of the blue, we got those tickets, right? I can tell you this. That was the very, very, you know, and I'm talking about recent times, but the beginning at the Loud House. I mean, I lost my voice.
Yeah, Sonny, I was there. I didn't have one the next day either.
So Sonny gives me these tickets, right? And he says, well, I think they're good. I'm not sure, right?
Yeah.
First row on top of the Phillies dugout, right? I was afraid to call him and say, listen.
Did the security say, how'd you get in here?
Right, exactly. I snuck through it. Right. I looked around. I'm going, okay. It reminded me of one of those things in grade school when they get the three things. One's a football, baseball, and the other one is a chicken.
Yeah.
And, like, which one doesn't belong here? I'm looking around.
How's the song go? One of these things is not like the other.
So my point is, man, baseball is incredible. And then last week, by the way, a month and a half ago, a friend of ours calls us and says, "You want some tickets?" And it was the game we made. You know, we won the division.
Yep.
Okay. So it was just amazing. We got very fortunate. My point is, it's been so exciting. However, as a lawyer, a great lawyer, somebody who's very successful on behalf of your clients. Baseball, except for pitching, okay, because pitching's not a game of failure. You got to win. But what I'm saying is that it's changed so much, okay, in regards to the power, the lower batting averages, and a lot of, the dealing with failure, okay. And the Phillies, the first half was absolutely incredible. Second half, I think we have the worst record after the break, okay, in the playoffs.
Of the playoff teams.
Right. So I wonder... You know, I wonder in some cases, it's such a long, long, long season. Like I said at the beginning of this, a lot of people say, oh, I'm afraid of, you know, the momentum. We're going to lose our momentum before, you know, with the bye. Guess what? We needed the bye.
Yeah.
So what do you think?
So a lot to unpack. And, you know, there's changes in the game that we've all seen. And I think it's easy to point out all of our problems. And I think... you know, none more great than our inability to deal with high quality pitching and a lot of strikeouts. This team strikes out at a historic rate for a good team. They don't do the little things well. They don't take care of the baseball well sometimes. You know, they get really loose in the field sometimes. And I get concerned about that aspect of this team. And you know, when you talk about guys that make contact, by converse, look at that San Diego Padres team last night. Those guys hit. Arise at the top of their order.
Well, Arise is one of my favorite players.
He's like a Tony Gwynn-esque type of player. And we don't really have that on this team. I think Alec Bohm could eventually be a guy like that. I think, you know, he's hovering around a 300 batting average. I think he could eventually be a 315 guy. I really do believe that he has that capability to do that. But, you know, this team strikes out an awful lot. But I come back to this. Is there any team in the playoffs that you'd rather have as a top three rotation than ours? And I think the answer is no. I think Zach Wheeler is such a difference maker that he, you know, can really change a short series. I think Christopher Sanchez has been such a boost. I mean, last year it was Ranger, Nola, and Wheeler. And this year, Ranger's not that guy in the second half. He's not in, and maybe the postseason pedigree that he has will allow him to turn it out. I don't think he's healthy. I don't think he's in shape. I don't know that how much you can really get out of Ranger this postseason. You know, so maybe a guy like Spencer Turnbull, who's coming back and they piece it together. Because listen, I'm going to go back to Dombrowski and Topper screwing it up when they put Walker and they forced him back into the rotation, took Turnbull out early in the season, and a lot of it fell apart after that in that fifth. You know, we've had a hole in that fifth starting spot pretty much the entire season.
And that was dictated by the salary. Other words, you know, you know, they pay him. And I wonder what happened to Walker. Was a former all-star pitcher. Maybe his arm is worn out. Because I tell you, one of the things that I watch is –
Split doesn't split anymore. That's part of the problem.
Well, I'll tell you what's interesting about it though. It might split, but it don't split hard. And when you've seen Doc Holliday when his breaking ball was breaking hard, as comparison to the end when his arm wasn't there, it still broke, but it didn't break hard down, and so I think when I look at Walker, that ball. That, you know, he you can see he knows how to pitch, but the ball is not breaking hard, man.
Have you looked at his eyes, though? Look at his eyes.
He doesn't look confident?
He has no confidence.
Yeah.
And a city like this can break you. It really can.
It can.
If he was hiding in Minnesota or some other market where, you know, as Reese was just interviewed, I don't know if you saw a little bit on, I was at the Chris Rose show, I think, and Reese was talking about, like, Philly's not for the faint of heart. We love you so hard as a player, but we will call you out. We will. I mean, look at what they're doing to, you know, Jalen Hurts now. I mean, it's like Nick Sirianni is going to be like, you know, persona non grata in like one more loss.
Well, exactly,
but that's what. And I won't say Philly is completely unique. I think if you play in a northeastern city. New York is very similar. Boston's very similar. Love hard, hate hard. We're not as forgiving.
did you ever see that? So Andy Reid was on the podcast with the Kelseys, and he said he was talking to Bill Parcells. Did you ever see what he said?
I didn't see that.
So Andy Reid gets the Philly job, and he said, "I'm talking to Bill Parcells," and he goes. And Bill goes like this. He goes, "Man, you're in the worst place, you know, imaginable for a lot of that stuff. For a lot of that." And Bill was in New York at the time. And he goes, "I know," or no, he said, "You're in the toughest place possible." And with Andy, you know, he's going, you know, that was obviously something because it told him something because Parcells. And by the way, Bill Parcells, you know, like I have a tendency, I love. So a lot of these guys, like, you know, even some like Lawrence Taylor and I love Lawrence Taylor and I love watching the old films, but I hated him, of course, when he played, right? So I hated Parcells, but Parcells was he was incredible with the media in New York. He would have been incredible in Philly. He was absolutely. So Andy Reid goes like this. When he said that, and he's in New York, I that got to tell you something. Because he said, you were in the toughest place possible to read.
Bill was a tremendous coach. I mean, like, unbelievable coach. But he was, you know, he's that old school mentality, man.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not surprising when you look at guys that are part of his lineage.
Like, oh, my God.
Bill Belichick. Belichick is largely, in the modern game, considered the best coach.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Over the past 20 years. And he's a disciple of, you know, Parcells. I mean, but he was part of, you know, obviously those groups, but it's great, but to get back to the Phillies thing, do I have concerns come Saturday? Yes, but there's two main factors that give me a lot of confidence, and one is
Tom Dinan is what gives me confidence.
By the way, one of the things that we do in the show is like to bring on our friends and have our friends join in the conversation. And one of the guys that we're going to be talking to today is my good friend Tom Dinan. Tom is a personal injury lawyer like myself. He works at a firm, Garces and Graebler. He actually runs their Philadelphia office. It's actually a large New Jersey based firm. And Tom is a good friend of mine. Somebody that I've worked closely with for more than the past decade.
Well, Tom is no stranger to the broadcast either. But let me tell you something before we get, because we're talking a little sports here.
Yeah.
Take your time.
But before you go any farther, just so everybody knows, Tom's been here since 8 o'clock this morning, but he refuses to come in just like the normal guy. Unfortunately, TJ didn't play the trumpets that you required, so I guess we're going to be, you know.
I mean, you know. We try to, as a Philly broadcast, we try not to play the trumpets in honor of Sugar Diaz. We try not to do those things. One of the things, and we'll kind of weave back and talk about Tom's practice in just a minute. But
sure.
Tom, I know you love sports just like us. So one of the things we've been talking about and kind of going over is obviously it's the second day of Red October and we're talking about prospects for the Phillies as we move forward. You know, obviously they're going to face either the Mets or or the Brewers in this next series.
Nobody in the National League is going to be easy.
I selfishly, you know, it's a weird dynamic for me. One, I'd like it to be the Mets so that I could go to the games pretty easily and just drive up there. But listen, anytime the Mets win is a sad day in America. It's part of me is like, you know, rooting. And the other part of it is if Rhys Hoskin breaks this city's heart, I'm not sure we can recover.
Yeah.
If he comes in
he
to Philly.
He beat us the last time he hit the home run.
If he hurts Philly, I'm not sure which is a more painful dagger, Rhys or the Mets doing it. But I have a lot of confidence in our pitching staff. I don't have a ton of confidence in our ability to not swing and miss 10 times a game. And I get concerned about the lack of ability to play small ball when necessary, you know, as a team. So those are some of my concerns. But I think, you know, I think home field advantage and the big three at the top of the rotation can overcome a lot of things. And let's hope, fingers crossed, that it happens.
What are you thinking, Tom?
So I think those are all valid points. And with, you know, the Phillies having, you know, some time off, it's always that push-pull between spending some time off, cleaning up those small little nagging injuries versus getting rusty and sitting around and watching other teams play who are hot and are going to continue to get hotter. And, you know, the Mets, the Brewers.
San Diego.
They're hot.
Hot.
They're hot.
I said that to Tom. I mean, to Sean.
They're hot. And, you know, Mike Tyson was a phenomenal fighter, but tall, right-handed fighters with good jabs always gave Mike Tyson problems. And, you know, the Padres, the Braves, the Mets, they all give the Phillies problems in their own way. But the Phillies also have a great right hand that could put any one of those teams to sleep at any given time.
One of the things we have a hard time, and it's been a real issue with, is falling behind. As soon as we fall behind,
I don't worry about this team's ability to fight back. Here's one of the things I think is an X factor. And I think, Tom, you just hit upon it. Like, Bryce has been dealing with nagging injuries all season long. This week off is probably a godsend.
Oh, yeah.
The ability to give Alec Boehm an extra week off to continue to recover from that wrist injury, good thing. And it's not like we were hitting all that great and we're suddenly getting a cold over it. So, you know, you can't get any colder than they've been in the past couple months.
Incredible.
So the reality is, you know, giving our pitchers a little bit extra rest, giving us, I hope that Topper throws Christopher Sanchez in game two. When you look at his home road splits, he's a vastly better pitcher at home than, and I think Aaron Nola is better equipped to deal with a hostile environment on the road than a guy like Christopher Sanchez is. So I hope they flip those two. And plus, you set up a righty-lefty-righty situation, and potentially if we have to go to game four, you have Ranger in game four. How much he gives you, who knows?
I mean, I would love some of whatever Aaron Nola has because he's completely calm at all times and my blood pressure's high, so I think I could stand to take a little bit of that down a couple points.
Well, I get it just looking at him.
Yeah, but
I'm actually mad that he's so calm.
But it's interesting, though, you bring up Nola. He's pitching stronger now. He's had a couple, that he has at the end of the year.
Yeah.
In the last couple of years. So he's had a couple iffy starts recently, but, you know, he last start was fantastic.
It was.
And so...
I mean, when you look at he missed the 200 inning mark by one this year. And Topper did try to give it to him. He tried to let him go out there.
You got the playoffs coming.
You got the playoffs coming. You got to take care of your guys. And, listen, in a short series, when I can throw Zach Wheeler twice,
yeah,
I like my chances. You know,
yeah.
I don't know that we're going to win a 70-game series with the holes we have in the rotation right now unless they decide to cobble together a fourth starter because Ranger doesn't seem to have the gas left in the tank for the year. I wouldn't be shocked to see if he gets surgery in the offseason.
Yeah.
There's something wrong with him. He's not that guy that he hasn't thrown a quality start since June 26th.
Yeah. I mean, and so he's definitely – he said he was favoring his back. But it's interesting. The conversation we had also as you were coming into to the studio, Tom, is, you know, people who – you know, Philly can break some people. And we were talking about, we brought up Parcells and a lot of these people. around, you know, in the sports world that have done incredibly well in cities that are very difficult to do well in. And so we brought up Taiwan Walker, okay, and like Sean said, you know, you may not, you know, you have your look in his eyes, okay? And Philadelphia, think about it for a second, okay? Because I don't know any harder court baseball guys than Sean Quinn, okay? I don't. And but think about this for a second. I know you know this. You couldn't. You lived it. We've won two World Series since 1889, okay?
You could also say since 1980.
Since 1980. But I'm,
if you wanted to close the window a little bit and make it not feel so so offensive, Joe.
But we always but we always recover and we're resilient. Okay, I wonder as of late. It's such a long season. Okay, Harper, you know the batting averages are up, but you know like he's been injured a lot of stuff. I wonder if they're just waiting for Red October because once you get so spoiled in that atmosphere. Even though I mean they needed to get to where they're at right now. I'm hoping that you know that what we're talking that is the spark because right now the Mets. By the way, anybody see? Have you seen? I never saw a set of games where both teams at the end of the game were celebrating in the locker room than the Mets and the Braves. Did you see that?
Yeah, because the split doubleheader. That was interesting. I've never seen that either.
But I'll tell you what I didn't want. I didn't want Arizona in there because you know.
But let's be honest. If you had to choose between the Braves, the Mets, and Arizona to lose. I mean, it wasn't possible for all three to lose, which would have really made me happy. Because it's like, literally, which devil do you choose?
It is true.
You know, it's
And the Mets are playing incredible, man.
And one of the things, just two last points before we kind of move on and talk about Tom's practice and really what we do on this show, two little small things that I just love and hate about baseball. And one is Major League Baseball allowing the Oakland Athletics to leave Oakland.
Yeah.
That pains me. And watching those fans, you know,
the guy was
lose,
the first game and the last game to see
you know,
that.
And just having those fans lose a team.
Oh, Jesus.
Could you imagine if the Phillies left us? Could you imagine if your team leaves you?
It's like losing
because
a
you have a
kid.
And it also made me appreciate John Middleton so much more.
Yeah.
You know, when you have a coach, when you have an owner like Fisher in Oakland, and then you compare him to Middleton in Philadelphia, it is such night and day in terms of an owner that gets it. And Middleton during, you know, the last homestand is sitting there out by Harry Callis' statue taking photos with all the fans. Yeah. I was walking by, he's like high-fiving guy. It just, you talk about that, and then, you know, so, you know, I don't know if you guys have comments about Oakland, but, and then there's one little tidbit I got to share with you guys.
What was really interesting was the last pitch might have been the hardest pitch ever thrown in the stadium.
When he threw
104.5.
Yeah. The Miller kid.
But other than that, you know, my heart, I mean, bleeds for them people.
Yeah.
You know, I think one of the things that Philly's ownership recognizes is that the team is inextricably linked with the fabric of the city.
Ugh.
And, you know, the fan base here will, you know, they'll pay more money, a couple more dollars a ticket to go to the games consistently. And I think that bears itself out in the attendance throughout the regular season, even when they're not playing good teams and even when they may not be playing well. So there's sort of a give and take there where, you know, I mean, you guys know this, like I lived in, you know, South Florida for almost 6 years.
Yep.
And I would go to the Marlins games every once in a while when the Phillies were playing and there's 3,000 people there.
Yeah,
and
crazy.
I flash back and all of a sudden I'm in a Marlins stadium. There's 3,000 people there. I'm behind home plate by the second inning. I felt like I was, you know, 14 years old at West Catholic skipping school to go down to the businessman special and be behind home plate in the mid-90s because no one was there.
Yeah, it's crazy. You know, that's an incredible – I mean, that is, you know, just – you know, because baseball is massive in Florida, right? That's why a lot of great players – a lot of parents send their kids down because they get to play every day. And so it does hurt. You know what really hurt? Watching the Chicago White Sox about 6 months, three or four months ago, with like in that massive stadium with 500 people in it, like
yeah, that was pretty sad.
You know, why don't you said something though about Philadelphia? you know, like it can break people. No question. There's no doubt. Okay, but let's look before we go into the law but let's just take one look.
I mean, it's so Tom's got the second half of our show.
You do, John.
I'll take the fourth quarter if you want to talk about the Eagles.
No,
we play all four quarters, baby.
Okay, so but this is, you know, you look at Philly, right? And we're all heart and soul Philly, right? Like, in other words, I you know, Eagles game, I turned it off last week when Hurts fumbled one after we scored a 2-point conversion. Okay, but and we're getting I never turned an Eagles game off my entire life, but I love them that much. I was so ticked. But let me just say one thing. Some of the great moments in the history of first of all, we can't do this show without mentioning Pete Rose and the loss of Pete Rose. Okay, and you talk about how hard this is. Okay, how hard the city is, but the greatness, so that you look at the greatest moments. Okay, by the way, we're gonna have to cancel Stan's show next and go to the next seven shows, but you talk about the great moments in the history of Philadelphia sports. You know, God rest Pete Rose's soul. You know what? In my opinion, the most poetic moment in the history of this city. Okay. Thinking back at 1980, we had never won a World Series. The Flyers had won, but there was 12. The Birds, Deep Rollies, and the Sixers had won. We were the losing a city gone and all this. And then we bring Pete Rose, right? And the most poetic moment, and I know you both know where I'm going with this, is here we go. We had the Manny Moe to play. We had hundreds of wins, 100 win seasons and never won it, right? And here we bring in Pete Rose. Now, I can't believe people don't talk about this more. And, you know, we're about to win the World Series, ninth inning, but it's getting a little heated. And, Bob Boone goes back to catch the ball, pops out, and who catches it and says, not this time, okay? I'm not letting yous lose. Now, that brings tears to my eyes because millions and millions and millions of fans, okay, through the ages, in Philadelphia, the city of Philadelphia, had pained and, you know, their entire existence. Okay, we bring Pete Rose in. Okay, we didn't win the first cup, but man, but look at that moment in history. That was the World Series. And you look at that moment in time, and we had won just the Broad Street Bullies, and got that was such a big deal. But there was like 15 teams in the league at the time. That moment was so impacting, man. I mean, that says everything to me because that made us a winner.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you're older than both of us, so we're gonna, you know,
so you don't remember that?
I mean, I don't remember it live.
Oh, I was three.
Yeah, so you know, I mean,
high school.
I mean, the gray hair probably gave it away that you have a little bit more experience than us. But you know, here we just, you know, have to point these things out and take you down a couple notches.
Yeah, no problem.
But I will say, you know, the thing about Pete Rose and what I respected most, obviously, was not his gambling abilities. But his he ate, slept, and breathed baseball. The guy just loved the game.
Yeah.
He loved to play the game. He was so intelligent about the game. If you ever watch any of the little clips that he did on the MLB Network where he was talking about, like, moving around in the box, trying different things, he's just a wizard.
And you watch those guys on MLB,
yeah.
And they look at him.
Like A-Rod. A-Rod had, A-Rod's, you know, 600-plus home runs, and, you know, and he's looking at him like, why did I never do that stuff?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he taught major, you know, the best of the best how to be a better player. And what I think Pete Rose is not a big man, but his heart might have been bigger than his body.
You know, and I think what a lot of, like, Phillies fans, they, you know, especially, like, those of us that weren't watching baseball during that era, lose sight of the fact that, you know, when Pete Rose came to the Phillies, say after 13 or 14 years with the Reds, he was not a young man by baseball standards.
No.
Yet had four very productive, very influential years here, and helped give the city a championship.
Yep. Yeah, let me say this, and you could see I got emotional with that. You know, having that catch, okay, back then, you got to understand we weren't even we had had our heart broken by the Dodgers. So you look at what that we did for Trey Turner when he was down, and that moment you were probably at that game.
I was.
Okay. Could you, were you ever prouder of Philadelphia fans than we were at that point where this guy, we were about to throw, plus we knew he had 13 years left on his contract. He wasn't going anywhere.
Because I'm such a cynic and a complainer, I was almost slightly protesting the applause. So I'm going to admit it. That's like a mea culpa here. I got up and gave the applause, but it was begrudgingly.
Right.
It's almost like when you see the wave happening in a stadium and you're like, I don't want to get up and do that. Right. I'm not doing it. Right. I can't play
like
along.
It's
not
a soccer game.
It's not a soccer game. I'm not doing it. But one last thing, and I don't know if I told you guys, I was at the All-Star game over the summer. I got to go, you know, my family, we always knock off a couple ballparks every year. This summer, we did a trip down to Houston. We saw the, Minute Maid Park, and then we took a drive up to Dallas and got to see the All-Star game,
Wow. See
Bohm's home run derby performance. And one of the things that has irritated me to no end about Major League Baseball the last couple of years is the All-Star Game jerseys and not having, like when we were kids, the players wearing their own jerseys and wearing their own uniforms. And it was always great to like look out in the field and see it, an athletic there, a red there, a Met. No, I don't want to see any Mets on the field, but you catch my point. But it was like always Yes. Seeing the mosaic of the colors on the field.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
Great news. I don't know if you guys saw the news yesterday. Starting next year, the players will be wearing their own jerseys again.
Well, that's great.
So you will, and hopefully they'll, you know, because I know, listen, we know why they were doing the All-Star Game jerseys, because they were selling a ton of them. So they were having special jerseys because people were paying $180 a pop for each of those jerseys. Well, you know what? I'm sure they'll find a way to get us a $180 jersey somewhere else with some new gimmick, just like they did with our horrible players, Friday night jerseys, which were like a beer league softball team.
Sean, you bring up so many topics, right? You know, you look at
speaking. It's called ADD.
I'm right with you there. But it makes me immediately think of the basketball. That is not even a game anymore. They shouldn't even play that.
No.
And football, they do have, it's touch football.
Well, it's funny though that when you talked about Pete Rose, and then you think of the historic play where he ran over in an All-Star game the catcher to win the game. Like, it was an All-Star game.
Exactly.
Like, Pete Rose ran over a catcher.
And he was at dinner with the guy the night before.
Yeah, so that tells you a little bit about Pete. Last words before our break.
Well, I was going to say, Tom, we're going to go to break, okay? And then we're going to come back with Tom Dinan. And I want to ID that the show you're listening to, Top Wear with Sean Quinn. Our guest is Tom Dinan. And of course, we're talking everything sports, but we're going to get into Tom's practice and career in a moment. Parting words before the break, Tom?
So much pressure on you,
people,
right here.
The people that I'm really, really rooting for, the Phillies training staff to get all the thoroughbreds 100%.
Well said by an injury attorney.
Yeah, that's right.
Listen, we're going to have more with Top Ward and Sean Quinn in just a moment.
Ladies, have you ever felt bloated for no good reason? Pelvic pain or pressure? Too full too fast, even if you're eating just a little bit? Not so unusual, right? But if you have any of these things and they go on for 2 weeks or longer, see a doctor. Because bloating, feeling too full too fast, and pelvic pain or pressure that doesn't go away can be signs of a gynecologic cancer, like cervical, ovarian, or uterine cancer. And if your periods are heavier or longer than usual, or you have bleeding after menopause, see a doctor right away. It may be nothing, but find out for sure. Learn the symptoms. Listen to your body. For more information about gynecologic cancers, call 1-800-CDC-INFO. That's 1-800-CDC-INFO. A message from HHS and CDC's Inside Knowledge campaign.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Top Wear with Sean Quinn on WWDB Talk 860. Shout out to TJ, our producer. Sean's guest is Tom Dinan, fantastic injury attorney. Over to you, Sean.
Yeah, so it feels like it's been so long that I need to almost reintroduce a little bit of what we do here. And, when we first, the brainchild of this show was obviously Joe, because, you know, immense amount of brains over there. But one of the ideas was to give a platform to lawyers that maybe are doing great things in our community, representing the least fortunate amongst us, and have the opportunity to give them a voice. You know, you don't see, although it would be frightening to see our mugs on billboards all over the city.
You see them, but they're just different billboards.
Yeah, yeah. Listen, let's be honest. The faces up on the billboards now are frightening enough. Tom and I chose as a public service announcement to not put our faces on billboards as well.
I
tried that. There were too many crashes by the stadium. We have since changed those games. But, you know, Tom Dinan, without further ado, is a good friend of mine. He's a fellow Philadelphia trial lawyer. He works at as I said in the beginning, a firm based out of New Jersey, but he runs their Philadelphia office at Garces, Graebler, and LeBrock. He's been there for a little bit more than 6.5 years, but he's been doing this like me for 20+ years. And he's worked with other, you know, really great firms in town. Also worked, you know, before he became a personal injury lawyer, worked on the opposite side of the fence. Got to see the dirty tricks of the insurance industry.
The dark side, if you know.
Will. Yeah, and he did that like much like I did. And obviously, you know, he also worked, you know, for the state as a state attorney, both in the Philadelphia region as well as he did a tour of duty down in Florida, and saw the light and came back to the Northeast. You know, for the past 15+ years now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, Tom's practice is pretty eclectic, but it really hones in on one of the, what I think are the most important cases that
vulnerable
we do as lawyers,
people.
And that's representing our elderly, the people that are unable to care for themselves in nursing homes, you know, and taking care of, you know, the voices that are often the least powerful in our community. So Tom's my go-to when it comes to nursing home malpractice cases, somebody that I always lean on and talk to. And if it was my own family member that needed that support, Tom be my guy.
Awesome. Well, Tom, welcome back to the broadcast. And if you would, elaborate a little.
So thank you. Thank you both very much for that very well-worded introduction. So as Sean said, I spent 7 years representing insurance companies and nursing homes, among other, you know, types of businesses that got sued for personal injury or wrongful death, as did Sean. And, you know, playing, you know, as they say, guarding the safe or playing defense, you know, really gives you an insight about how claims are evaluated, adjusted, valued, and either defended and settled or defended and tried. And, you know, really, you know, Sean and I both, I think we both take that experience and now use that on behalf of our clients. You know, Sean's been doing plaintiff's work for what, like 17 years now, Sean?
Plaintiff side now for, geez, I don't want to date myself a bit, but 23 years.
23, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, we've established that you're both too young to
yeah,
see
yeah,
the 1980.
Yeah, right, yeah.
So at least you're good there.
Yeah, I got you by like 3 years, a little bit older, you know.
So, I mean, you know, in the all personal injury cases are personal. You know, like insurance companies have hundreds of thousands, if not millions of claims. Insurance defense firms have hundreds, if not thousands, of claims. Personal injury firms, you know, like that represent plaintiffs, you know, we have hundreds, if not thousands, of claims. But you only have one case. So, and your family only has
doesn't
one
get
case.
More personal than that.
Doesn't get more personal than that. So it's important that you, client communication is important, you know, talking to your attorney.
But it's important that you have somebody who you picked the right attorney first off, straight up, that specializes in whatever your situation is.
Yeah, I mean, and I think Sean's in agreement with me on this. You don't want plaintiff's personal injury lawyers writing your wills or no. doing your divorces or, you know, doing real estate transactions. Because although we all have an attorney ID number,
yeah, sure.
They're all different animals.
Yeah, and you can't have a dabbler.
No. The days of doing a bunch of different things, you know, in an average fashion are gone. 70s and the 80s, those days are gone. I never saw them. Sean never saw
yep.
them. So you really have to be, you can't just be a doctor. You need to be a specialist.
Yeah. And yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, you need knee surgery. I'm not going to a podiatrist, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just the reality is you need somebody, and that's what I kind of view, you know, about the practice of nursing home malpractice is, you know, there's a lot of personal injury lawyers. Not all personal injury lawyers will deal with nursing home claims. And if they do, they're not always dealing with them the right way and handling and working them up and seeing the insides of those nursing homes, understanding the unique challenges. And one of the things that I know you run into is arbitration clauses in a lot of those agreements and the fundamental taking away of our right to a jury trial in America.
Yeah, the arbitration clauses that are in many instances signed or during the admissions process are essentially giving the nursing home a free ticket to provide negligent medical care and escape having a jury hold them accountable. Yeah. And the, you know, this issue has waffled back and forth for years. There was an administrative order from Medicare that came down some years ago that said they were, you know, de facto not enforceable, but that's been rescinded. And, you know, now you have to, you know, basically haggle over each one if it's in the file, so to speak, in the patient's chart, as if it were any other contract. Is it, you know, did the person that sign it have capacity to sign it? Did they understand it? Are the terms unconscionable? One of the most practical advice I tell people is if you're not comfortable with something, don't sign it. Ask as many questions either on your own behalf or if you have power of attorney on behalf of whether it's your mother, your father, you know, grandparent, you know, whatever, whoever, you know, talk to the administrator of the nursing home until you are comfortable with what you're signing. And, you know,
yeah, because you don't have a lot. I mean, my experience with it is, and the notion of arbitration agreements, and I think it kind of it makes sense to drill down on this a little bit, is because I don't know that people really appreciate that there are distinct rights that are given away and how the arbitration process is set up to screw them over. It won't be a group of your peers deciding whether something is right or wrong. It is industry insiders and lawyers that are hand-selected by basically the bad guys in this equation to decide whether something is right or wrong.
And when you do arbitration, isn't it for a lower number? Is it 50,000 or less?
That's state court arbitration. These are arbitrations in the context of like a contractual thing. I'm not aware of any monetary limits as it relates to nursing home malpractice, but it's just the forum in which you're presenting your case.
Yeah, and what the arbitration agreements do is, you know, it takes many of the arrows out of the quiver as a plaintiff in a nursing home case. You're still going to, you know, have your claim heard. It's just going to be by people who have an attorney ID number and who are, you know, going to value the case and look at it in a little bit more clinical of a fashion and not really pay attention to some of the things that are important for most juries. For example, the understaffing issue at the skilled nursing facilities.
Yeah, absolutely.
I hate to sound, you know, calculating and callous about this, but the staffing is a business decision.
Yeah, you got so many hedge funds funds that own these places.
The staffing is a business decision, and depending on the year and the facility and whether it's a standalone home or how many homes are in the chain, staffing accounts for, you know, about 72% to 80% of the operating budget. So, you know, you have your certified nurses assistants, your CNAs. They're your lowest paid, your least trained, but they spend the most amount of the time on a daily basis with the patients. And then a level up from them, you have your LPNs, who are licensed practical nurses, not RNs. They spend less time with the patients. And then you have your, you know, your RNs and, you know, your docs that round. But, you know, the calculus for a lot of the homes is if they are understaffed by maybe 10%, and that means every patient gets half hour, 45 minutes less FaceTime with a CNA on a daily basis, well, over a period of time, you know, negligent acts or omissions happen, and it's directly attributable to the patients not having that care.
One of the things I think is interesting, and I think once you're in a lawsuit, you can find out how many people were working on a specific day. But how does the consumer in you know, maybe, that maybe have their mom or dad in a nursing home, determine or find out the information that they're in an understaffed facility? Obviously, there's optics where you can say, hey, there's just not a lot of people out of here. But how do they go about figuring those things out?
So there's a couple different ways. I guess, that won't address staffing, but a lot of times where there's smoke, there is fire. You know, you can go on the county civil dockets of any county that the nursing home is in and see if, you know, if there's a nursing home, a skilled nursing facility that's been in existence for 20 years. And
they've been sued.
And yeah, but they've been sued if there's five cases over 20 years, or if there's 250 cases over 20 years, play the odds. The other two ways are Medicare provides a lot of this information accessible to the general public. You just got to sort of ferret your way through the website. If you go to Google, cmsnursinghomesearch.org, and then you can do either by name, by city, or by zip code. And then you start clicking in, and you can see who owns the facility, what the what their inspection ratings are for staffing, for medical care, how many violations they've had, what those violations are for. Now you start digging through it, and you know it obviously doesn't name patients by name, but you'll be able to see, you know, the nature and quality of the violations, like, did someone not get a Jell-O with their Fistics at lunch?
Yeah.
Or, you know, was someone left unattended and they fell and they fractured a cervical vertebrae and they died 2 weeks later? Like,
yep.
There's an ocean between those two, so you really have to put your fingers on the details.
What? I just want to ask, what should people do if they think, if they see signs of nursing home neglect or abuse? How do you, first of all, what are the first signs? And number two, your regular person, what should they do?
So, you know, as Sean will tell you, anytime we get involved, it's after the fact. It's after something happened. And, you know, our job is to go back and reverse engineer what happened, how it happened, who was responsible, and who was asleep at the wheel, for lack of a better term. And, you know, I get calls that, oh, you know, my mom's in, you know, ABC nursing home, and this is what I see. And most of the time, it's premature to get involved. Yes. However, when you see a situation where, you know, you or your relative, you know, obviously acute, severe, unexplained injuries, falls with head trauma, falls with fractures, unexplained bruising, open, you know, plum to orange size wounds,
yeah,
on your sacrum,
wounds, right.
You know, and what is, you know, perhaps, you know, really most distressing is I have a lot of cases with otherwise, you know, people in their late 60s, early 70s that are functional. They may have some other stuff going on, but they go to a rehab facility for post-op care for a knee replacement or for a hip replacement, and they never come out.
Yeah.
Because of the negligent medical care.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
A lot of those acute care facilities are not equipped or should not be in that business.
Yeah.
What can people expect? Well, a couple things. Number one, you know, listeners, if they're listening to, you know, to you right now, and you're a very successful and caring person, what can they expect, you know, if you're representing them?
So I think one of the things is, you know, there is unfortunately a lot of people in, you know, Sean's line of work and my line of work that are always trying to sell you the sunroof with the navigation system and, you know, the more bells and whistles and are always going to tell you everything's great. I make it a point to tell my clients very early on, based on what you're telling me, this is what I think's going on, but I can't weigh in on this subject until I see a full spread of medical records. I go through them. I talk about the pros and cons of everything with my expert. And then we know where we're going, whether we're going left, right.
And communications with the clients.
Yeah. And, clients appreciate, they don't want you to tell them everything's going to be great if it may not be great. They appreciate you telling them, look, this is, you know,
here's the situation.
This is what cards are on the table. This is what I think is in the deck. And this is how long it's going to take me to get an answer to what's in the deck.
You mean like you don't have a lawsuit calculator on your website like some of our competitors do that are literally on day one, without having any information, giving these people a bunch of phony garbage as to what their case is worth? Listen, we both get that question. What's my case worth? And I always use the book analogy in – and we're in chapter one. I don't know how this story ends.
Well,
I don't know where this is going. And if you want me to write down a number here, you might as well crumble that up and throw it in the waistband in the corner because that's what it's worth.
Well, here's a number that I would ask is about out-of-pocket costs, okay, for both of your services, okay? When somebody walks in, they may not be a millionaire. They may not – attorneys like yourself, especially listening here on the radio, sound like, you know, you'd be an astronomical amount of money to come in and ask – I mean, to get a – you know, to get some advice or to retain you. How does that work?
So it's really just like the bad billboards say, no fee unless you recover.
Yep.
That is
no out-of-pocket cost.
None, unless there's a recovery. There is, you know, that is ingrained in the fabric of representing, you know, normal, everyday working people that you don't send a monthly bill to or collect retainers from. It's only if there is a monetary recovery, either by way of settlement, arbitration, verdict, or trial verdict, do you then hash out the debits and the credits and... You know, you have on one hand the attorney's fees to fund and prosecute the case, and then you have the attorney fee that is, you know, subject to the contingency fee.
And I think that's something that people don't always appreciate is that we will willingly spend our time and our money in the pursuit of victory.
Well, that's what people need to know. They need to be able to. Well, how do you gauge the attorneys? Well, their track record and all, but also. And this is what we're doing here.
We're the slingshot, right? We keep David versus Goliath, and we allow, you know, people to take on big corporations,
yep,
big nursing home, big hedge funds, big insurance companies, and we're just one or two guys, you know, kind of keeping that playing field just a bit leveled. It's pretty awesome to do.
You know, I had a client ask me, you know, we were just chit-chatting one time, and we were talking about, you know, betting on sports, and you know, I said, I don't bet. And he's like, well, why not? I said, not only am I working for 2 or 3 years on a case,
yeah,
and don't know if I'm going to win, I'm putting out my own money to fund the,
yeah,
case.
Right. Yeah.
And he's like, I never looked at it that way.
So you are betting on yourself and representing the client at the highest level. To me, understanding if I'm out there listening, I want to know the important things. You both of you have firms that have the resources to be successful, communication so important, and being honest and straightforward in the communicative process.
One of the things that we always like to do is give you that last bit of plug. How can people find you? Where's the website? What's the number? What's your email? Give people an opportunity to find you.
Okay, so my name is Thomas Dinan, D-I-N-A-N, Garces, Grabler, and LeBrock. Our Philadelphia office is 215-235-2000.
Website?
at Garces Grabler. LeBrock.com.
Yeah.
Awesome. And, Tom, how about your business?
Yeah, no problem. Again, it's Sean Quinn, Quinn Injury Lawyers in Philadelphia. You can find us at QuinnLawyers.com or 1-800-QUINN-LAW.
Awesome. Listen, this show is way too fast. We'll get to the Eagles then next time.
Yeah, definitely.
No question. And I want to thank everybody for tuning in to Top Lawyer with Sean Quinn. I want to thank our host, Sean Quinn. I want to thank Tom Dinan, our guest. TJ in the producer's booth on behalf of Tom and Sean. I'm Joe Dougherty. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Go Phils.